I really appreciate everybody hanging in there. I know it's been a long couple days, and we're getting near the end of the session, so I really appreciate that. And I do think we could have made our title a little longer just to see if we could have filled the slide up just a little bit more. I want to make sure to put my disclosure. We were very lucky on this project in that I'm sure it's a problem everybody wants to have, but we actually received an anonymous donation in order to do it, and so I have nothing to disclose. I don't know who gave us the money. So I always want to start off have you taking a look at some of the participants so you have a feel for the people who are involved, because I think sometimes we get up and present lots of data and we forget the human faces, and I just want to make sure you remember the faces. So the Healthy Steps for Families program, as I said, came about as a result of an anonymous donation. And the only guidelines we had was that the donor would like us to do something in the Tucson, Arizona area, and would like it to be something around behavior lifestyle change. And a lot of the projects that I had been working on at that time were along the border, which was theoretically, Tucson counts as a border community, but it characteristically doesn't feel like a border community quite as much. So most of our projects had been outside of the Tucson area. And so during that conversation with folks at the College of Public Health, we started talking about what it was we wanted to try to do and start a whole brand new area of research. And one of the things that we really felt like we wanted to start addressing is the rising rates of obesity in children, especially in Latino youth, where the more recent stats are showing 68% of the kids are overweight or at risk for overweight. And so we really wanted to start working in that area, and it was an area we had not done previously. But we also started talking about the fact that we really wanted, ideally what we want to do is get to the kids before they get overweight or obese, because then it's a lot easier not to have to turn it around. And so in that conversation, we started really thinking that that's where we wanted to focus. But of course, if you're starting to work with little kids, it's not like we're going to go and tell them how to, you know, cook the appropriate food at home and things. And so what we wanted to do was focus on their parents and improve role modeling behaviors and also hopefully help the parents, which we know based on some of the stats Craig just presented, even though they're a little younger than that, are having high rates of obesity, high rates of a lot of different risk factors. So we really wanted to focus on the parents. So I've listed some of the purposes for our project. But we're really going to focus on, for today, I'm going to really focus on the discussion about what we did with the parents. And there's a second bullet, which is sort of my personal pet peeve that I have to bring up at every presentation, is the issue of sustainability of primary prevention programs. And it's quite honestly driving me nuts in that we keep finding effective programs that seem to work or making positive impacts on people's health, and all we can do is try to find new grant funding to slant it in a different way in order to fund it again. So when going into this program, we decided that what we would try to do is try to embed it into a system right away that has the potential to absorb, if it worked and was effective, that it would have the potential that maybe we could continue it. So in order to do this program, we had a really fun time creating new partners. We are strong believers at the University of Arizona, and now that I'm in Indiana University, I'll say we are becoming strong believers at Indiana University of community-based participatory research. And for those of you who've done that, know it's a long process, and so it doesn't always start off at the highest levels of participation at the beginning, but it starts long relationships. And so in that quest for a strong, long-lasting partnerships, we had the Arizona Prevention Research Center, which is the CDC-funded research center, and the Canyon Ranch Institute, which is a nonprofit organization, Child Parent Centers, Inc., which is the Head Start grantee for southeastern Arizona. And we had two family literacy programs, Pima Community College Family Literacy Program and the Cochise Community College Family Literacy Program. So I want to tell you a little bit about those the community partners, because they were the critical ones to getting this off the ground, is that Child Parent Resources has been the Head Start grantee for over 40 years in five counties within southeast Arizona. And most of you probably know Head Start programs target 0 to 5-year-old low-income families of small children, and that part of what they do, they tend to frequently focus on, years have come and gone as to how much they've been able to focus on nutritional factors, but they have focused on nutrition and more recently are trying to work in physical activity programs. They are also required to do monthly programs with parents, and so we thought this was a really nice possibility of partnering and adding in, because frequently what they were saying is some of the topics that the parents were bringing up were health and wellness topics. So the Child Parent Centers Inc. helped us by inviting all of their centers that met the appropriate demographics. We were basing this whole program off of Pasos Adelante. It was really targeting Mexican American families, and so some of the pops, you know, so we had to have the right demographic mix for the different centers. The other sites that the Child Parent Centers kind of, you know, it's always lovely when you blissfully walk in and you are clueless about what's going on in these programs, because they brought up the family literacy programs. And family literacy programs frequently are attached or partner with either a Head Start program or elementary schools. And so they are also the families and family, the participants in family literacy programs also have that small children that they focus that in their families. And at the beginning, I raised this, that when we started, the Pima Community College Family Literacy Program had 8 different sites around town. By the end, they were down to 3. So just raising that as issues of sustainability already. We also worked with the Cochise County Community College. Cochise is where we had done a lot of the Pasos Adelante programs for about 10 years. And they have one family literacy site. So because we had this experience with the Pasos Adelante program since about 2000, what we wanted to do is take that curriculum that Craig showed you the sessions, and it's pretty much the same curricula. But as he said, his program was targeting the older folks. We'd had much greater success getting older folks in. And so what we wanted to do is take that curricula and try to make it more pertinent for younger participants and see if we could make it for the parents of kids to see what they can do to reduce their risk for chronic disease and what they can do to help their kids to live healthier lives. So we knew that within the Pasos Adelante program, we've seen and shown that we've had significant drops in BMI, weight, waist circumference, hip circumference that have lasted up to 3 months after they finished the program, that critical 3 months later that Craig was talking about, and he's absolutely right. I'm not sure I would say the same thing if we were following him 3 months further to be 6 months out. So things start to slip back. So we modified that curriculum to try to increase the risk for the relevance for younger participants. We wanted to make more linkages between the behaviors that we were talking about in class with the families and the kids and the impact, you know, really kind of going after that, my personal pet peeves, the soda consumption in small children, you know, that whole thing of trying to really help the moms and stuff as they came in with their big gulps to start thinking about, you know, what do we want to do with our kids. And so we really emphasized role modeling. And for the family literacy program, which was a great opportunity, is that we created literacy pieces, pulling pieces and vocabulary words and things like that out of the curriculum so that they could tie those in throughout the week to feed that into the curriculum. There's some ladies with the food pyramid in front of them. So we ran the program for 2 years, and the goal was to run the 12-week programs. We learned that every environment was very different, so here was our challenge to walk into every Head Start program was different, every family literacy program was different, and how do we maintain what we would call fidelity while still adapting and still allowing the programs to be successful at their sites. So we did the 12-week programs. Sometimes they were 1 hour a week, sometimes they were 2 hours a week, so obviously if you take a two-hour-a-week class and reduce it to one, you're having to get rid of some stuff. We did walking groups outside, as Craig mentioned, and then in the second year, the first year we had the family literacy groups, and they suggested when we brought them back in for the second year that it was kind of hard for them because it just, it felt like for them they took a lot of their extra time during that 12 week, and so they requested if we could spread 12 sessions over 24 weeks. And so it became something that lasted the entire length of their academic year. I was really excited by this because I thought, here's a chance to make health and wellness kind of an ongoing theme for them. But it also made all of our analyses, you know, as researchers, very messy. I knew I was going to have a problem. Okay, so we did basically all the same kinds of measurements that Craig did, except for we also added in measurements of height and weight of their kids. We had, so you can see, we had about 6 family literacy sites with 91 participants versus 5 Head Start sites, which was where we were recruiting groups outside to run as a separate session, and we only could get 23. You can see already that there's a challenge there for recruitment. So our demographics are basically female. I look at Craig's 30%. I mean, if he didn't have pictures to prove it, I'd think he was making it up. But just kidding. we were 98% Hispanic, preferred Spanish speaking. I think most of our classes were done in Spanish. Lots of people born, 97% born in Mexico, and low income, obviously, which is the requirements to get into Head Start. We had very relatively low rates of smoking, low rates of diabetes. Again, this is a crew, this looks very different from the group we're used to working with. But if you look at the one that we, that kind of flags, is about a 29% group that would be classified based on the CESD scale, which is a scale for measuring depression. About 29% would be considered at risk and would probably need to have a follow-up. So, and 32% had health insurance of some sort. I should say Zumba is the way to go. We did walking groups, and that was kind of too slow speed for most of the folks, but Zumba, that's the thing. I just wanted to present really quickly, I think, what we found is that we did get baselines, I mean, kind of sort of trends in significance. They were really, you know, they're a little bit just sad. They make me sad. These are not as lovely as I would like to see them, and they're not as strong as what we see in the other programs. And I should say the HIP result is about identical to the waist, and somehow I managed to leave that off. But they're all kind of there. They're kind of there, and it may be a sample size issue. We had about 113 people at the end. But what we wanted to do, present here real quickly, is what happened when we took the 12-week program and spread it across in 24 weeks. Remember I said, and I'm putting it out there, I thought the 24-week would be great. That would do the trick. Well, really, for weight and waist hip, we didn't see any difference between the two groups. But we did see a difference between BMI change, and this is indicating so that minus 0.77 is almost a 1 change in 1 unit of BMI. And but which group is it that shows the best results? It's the shorter group, the group that did it more concisely. Same thing for waist circumference. We had that same pattern. Something was going on with our groups that were going on for 24 weeks. I had a problem with my HIP data getting up here. HIP data looks exactly like this. Again, the 12-week program looks better. So I just want to close with some challenges we had. The Head Start program, which we thought was going to be this great potential, was really challenging for us to recruit. We had a really hard time. We had, when we would go in and we tried everything we could, from really having the site director help us to recruit to everything. I mean, our goal had been to have a successful program and create community health workers from within the Head Start program, but we just never got enough people within that program to make it work. So we got people to sign up, but they wouldn't show up. If you're familiar with the legislation in Arizona, SB 1070 passed right in the middle of our program. We would have sites that they would be having, we'd have Border Patrol sitting out in front of the Head Start programs. And so there were lots of kind of ugly situations for people. And, you know, is it any wonder they didn't come back, you know? So it's, that's kind of was at that point that I realized, kind of had to step back and think about what we were doing for chronic disease prevention, because it really was a low priority for a lot of people. The family literacy program had, the first year we had to kind of convince people, and the only thing, the reason the teachers liked us was because we were free labor to come in and teach the class. I mean, no offense to family literacy program. Our goal there for sustainability was that after a couple years of working with us, they could do it. They could do the curricula on their own, and I still have hope. But our challenge is that they went from 8 funded sites to 3. They had massive staff turnover, so there was nobody left who had worked with us. So the next year came up, and they didn't even know about the program at that point, whereas the 3 teachers who had done it the previous year before had loved it. We had participants who had been in it multiple years, who were teaching parts of the classes, who loved it. So I still think there's hope, but not as great. Okay, final slide. So we had physiological changes that were not as strong as we had seen in the older populations. But in many ways, this younger group didn't have as high of risk or as advanced risk as the older groups, so that may not be surprising. When we did have differences between the 12 and 24 weeks of this member, it's the same program, 12 sessions, but when they were spread out longer, we had better results when it was shorter. Absolutely think we need to look further at depression within this group, and again, is it any surprising that depression might be a problem? And that further analysis we're also going to be examining many of the factors that Craig listed. We have all the same variables around physical activity behaviors and nutrition that he had. And what we then have the ability to look at is how that transferred self-report to what the parents said about what they were doing with their kids. So, and then my final thing about sustainability, we thought we were doing it right, but there's many challenges with that. And so our biggest goal, in some ways, is not to create more programs. Our biggest goal is to figure out how to make sure that we can maintain the effective programs that we have.